This is Scripture Read Badly,
a podcast where two grown-up pastors' kids discuss the stories of the Bible in chronological order,
attempting to avoid heresy and generally having a good time.
I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Ryan.
Sit back and rejoice.
Today's verse comes from Numbers chapter 25, verse 17. Harass the Midianites and strike them down. Here is God giving us permission to bully others. My name is Ryan. Welcome to Scripture Read Badly.
And I'm Jeremy, and I definitely like bullying people. That's what I did all through high school, right? Oh, no, wait. It was the opposite of that. Oof. Boo! I hate bullies. Today we are going through Numbers 25 to whenever we finish. And do you want to open up with a 5-second summary?
Yeah, all right.
Just tell me when to press the button, and then when it goes off, I'll be making this noise. Boo! Boo!
Okay.
That looks really nice on Audacity. Boo!
All right. Okay, I am ready.
Go.
Israel sucks. There's a good priest. Census. Women inheritance.
Boop.
How was that?
Ooh, women inheritance. That was good.
Okay, well, I can expand on that a little bit.
What?
I started out by saying Israel sucks.
Yeah, true.
The whole thing. Yeah, I can break it down. So the Israel sucks part for my... my introduction there was that they arrive at a place called Shittim, or Shittim, depending on how you want to pronounce it. And I can think of so many puns to do with a team that is not very good, but I'm not going to say any of them. We have the first mention of Israel worshipping Baal. Although we did see it a few ago, probably back in Leviticus, I think there was mention of Baal.
Yep.
But we have a pretty cool sentence where it says Israel yoked himself to Baal. So that's...
Where's that?
That's in verse 3 of chapter 25.
But before that, it says the people began to whore with the daughters of Moab.
Oh, classic. And as we remember... the Moabites were the ones that just got prophesied against by Balaam, but they did not go into battle against the Israelites yet. So that is
interesting.
Instead,
they just started spreading their filth.
Yeah, spreading it all over the place.
Worst.
And so then these the daughters of Moab invite the people of Israel to sacrifice to their gods, and the people bowed down to their gods and they yoked themselves to Baal. And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel. Now this is exactly what God has already said to Moses, to the people of Israel, will happen if they allow people around them in the surrounding nations to not only survive, but also to intermarry. Or in this case, maybe just to have relations with outside of marriage.
Yep.
There would be consequences. Israel will inevitably turn from Yahweh to these surrounding gods if they are not careful. And they let their guards down, they... whore after the daughters of Moab and immediately start worshipping Baal.
Boo! And, okay, funny story about the word whore. I was playing guitar in a hardcore band and our lead singer was maybe 16 at the time.
Yep.
And I was reading through all of the Old Testament prophets, and so all of my lyrics that I was writing had the word whore in it quite a lot.
Yeah.
And... Josh would like look at the lyrics and be like, I can't say any of these words. I was like, come on, man, it's in the Bible. So I had to rewrite them all and not have the word whore in. Anyway.
There are so many things saying? In the Bible that would make very disturbing lyrics to a song. Like,
oh, yeah.
He spilled his seed.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little weird.
Oh, you got to spill your seed.
Yeah.
That's got to be in a song.
Yep. Yeah, so God says to Moses, take all the chiefs of the people and hang them in the sun before the Lord, that the fierce anger of the Lord may turn away from Israel. Wow.
Hang them.
Okay,
so... Oh, in my Bible it says impale.
Wow.
Impale them in the sun before the Lord.
Now, I wonder if this is the same phrase that is used to describe being hung on a cross. Because there is somewhere else that it says, cursed is anyone that is hung on a tree. That might be in Deuteronomy. We may not have got to that yet. But maybe this is that they are being impaled on a cross or a tree or something, being hung in the presence of God in the sun to bake. So... clearly, the chiefs are not the judges of Israel, because the judges of Israel were the ones who were put into a position of judicial authority back in Exodus 18, and probably passed down through this generation. So 40 years later, we have these judges of Israel who helped Moses deal with the law and upholding things, settling legal issues, all that type of thing. And Moses says, find these men who have yoked themselves to the Baal of Peor and bring them up and have them hung. So, behold, one of the people of Israel came and brought a Midianite woman to his family in the sight of Moses and in the sight of the whole congregation of the people of Israel, while they were weeping in the entrance of the tent of meeting. So this is after God has pronounced judgment, and this dude brings this Midianite chick to the tent of meeting. And when Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, so this is Aaron's grandson, who has taken over as the head priest at this stage, saw this lady, he rose and left the congregation, took a spear in his hand, went after the men of Israel into the chamber, and pierced both of them, the men of Israel and the woman, through her belly. Thus the plague on the people of Israel was stopped. Nevertheless, those who died by the plague were 24,000. There was a plague? Did I miss something?
Yes, you did. It was in 24A, the plague.
Sorry.
Ooh, good background music.
Yeah, I have to take this phone call. That's my computer doing that thing.
Oh, yep, you're fine.
Okay. Sorry. Let me ask that emphatic question again and then have you respond to it once more. There was a plague? Did I miss something? Where was that?
Yes, it was in 24A when it was just like, there was a plague, doodly doodly do. I think it could refer to the plague in speech marks of them whoring with the people of their gods. And side point to that, when I read it just now, I thought they were impaling Moabites, and I was like, what are you doing that for? It wasn't their fault they whored with them.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it kind of was. And it's funny, the word plague, because they use the plague word in a few different places in the narrative of Numbers and, I think, Exodus, of times when they're disobeying God, so they start getting sick. Or they disobey God and then the fiery serpents come.
Right.
Or they disobey God and bloody bloody. There's always plagues. And so I wonder if it's like a buzzword of like the plague that is sin running rampant through the camp. And then God has these things and ways to shut it down.
Mm-hmm.
Which this one is quite intense. That he actually skewered two people. But then have you ever been to a wedding where...
people got impaled?
Brings, or where a family member brings a person to the wedding that everyone knows will start a fight?
No.
Or even seen like a sitcom of that happening?
No.
I think I remember one, I think it was Parks and Rec, and one of the main characters' dads and mums had divorced, and the dad brought his new wife who was already pregnant, and everyone knew that that was going to start a fight, and it totally did.
Yeah.
And I wonder if it was like that, like everyone saw he brought the Midian woman and everyone's like, oh, what's gonna happen, like who's gonna start the fight? And then Phinehas is just like, boos,
yeah,
I'm shutting this down, you don't bring a woman like that here.
Mm-hmm. That's really I like how you said It's kind of I like how you said boost. It's the pattern of these books where they do something bad and there's consequences. There's a plague, they do something bad, there's serpents, they do something bad, there's more plagues. So it is kind of implied in verse 3 where it says the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel. That was kind of a plague happening again.
Yeah.
This lady being brought in to the in the sight of the whole congregation of the people of Israel, I think that's super weird, because if people know that the reason there has been the chiefs of the tribes hung on impaled on a stick in front of everyone was because they whored after Baal and the people of the surrounding tribes, then why would you bring someone back? Why would you why would you openly do it?
Why wouldn't you secretly just put her in your tent, right?
Yeah, exactly. So this guy dropped the ball and there were consequences. They both got impaled, probably run through with a spear or something, which is pretty intense. And that was Phinehas, the priest, who did it. So
he's pretty good friends with blood and guts.
Yeah, yeah.
And chopping stuff.
Heaps good. He's very familiar with it. And he's also intimately familiar with the practices of sacrifice and understanding how death brings about blessing and life.
It also shows a lot of God's attitude to sin. Like, he understands that sin and community spreads real quick, like a sickness. Like in Lewis House, when we used to have to quarantine people who were spewing or diarrhoeing, you have to get that person away or it spreads.
Mm-hmm.
And so this, God has seen the people shack up with people they shouldn't. He's seen the sin spread. And he knows for a fact, and we know for a fact, that it's not just going to stop on its own. Like, people aren't that well clued in. It needs, like, conviction, or it needs something shocking to make them rethink everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's happened in my life. Like, when I've hit rock bottom, that's the moment I'm be like, whoa, my life is terrible. I need to fix it.
Yeah.
So this is like God's rock bottom for the Israelites, that there is a plague and there's a physical representation of that plague through their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's also this moment where this person has walked back into the community after the plague is going and after they've impaled people. And then they get impaled, and it's like, this is serious. Like, it's serious to protect this community from death that I have to go over the top and skewer two people at the same time.
Yeah, and God refers to that as his jealousy and how Phinehas burned with the jealousy of the Lord. And we know that the very first commandment in the Ten Commandments was, you shall have no other gods before me. And Israel here is seen to be chasing after Baal first and foremost.
Gross.
And so this is God being a jealous lover and saying, I am not going to have this. I refuse to let you continue lusting after Baal because you are my people. And so Phinehas understands that, and he knows the magnitude of God's jealousy and of God's desire for his people. And so he shuts this down, and God blesses him in return and says, your people are going to be an everlasting priesthood, a perpetual priesthood, because you were jealous for God and you made atonement for the people of Israel. And so he single-handedly, or double-handedly probably with a spear, stopped the spread of this plague, of which 24,000 people had died. So I think it may have taken the actions of somebody in a quite, like you said, quite an over the top manner to drill things home for people and help them to understand just how important it was to hold on to the first of the Ten Commandments. Yes. So,
come on, kids.
Yeah.
Get with the program.
The name of the Midianite woman is given, which is interesting.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, the slain man, His name was Zimri, the son of Salu, chief of a father's house belonging to the Simeonites. So his father perhaps may have been one of the chiefs that was hung or impaled.
Oh.
But maybe not, but maybe it's because of his influence within his tribe, or at least within his father's house, within his tribe, that he was a prominent enough person to be a demonstration, maybe. But Cosby, the Midianite woman, her name is given, and she was the tribal head of a father's house in Midian. So,
oh, okay.
It seems as though there's a bit of a conspiracy happening.
Influence.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, yep. Then God says the thing, harass the Midianites, strike them down. They've harassed you with their wiles.
Ooh, their wiles.
Very,
hey boys,
very
come
wily.
Over and worship this god with us.
With which they beguiled you in the matter of Peor and in the matter of Cosby, the daughter of the chief of Midian, their sister, who was killed on the day of the plague on account of Peor. Man, that's a confusing sentence with a lot of names, and if you're not paying attention, you'll get lost very quickly. But then after the plague, we move into chapter 26. God,
which we are going to skip completely. Yeah. He counts a bunch of people.
There is the census.
You can read it if you want.
The new generation. Definitely going to skip all those people. But then, Jeremy, chapter 26 finishes with, let me see. It's the last few chapters, last few verses of it says, those who were listed by Moses and Eleazar the priest, who listed the people of Israel in the plains of Moab by the Jordan of Jericho, blah, blah, blah. Among them were none of those who were listed by Aaron and Moses. So that is God saying, now everyone that was alive that came out of Egypt and was over a certain age has died. Everyone from that generation is dead. This is the new generation from which I am going to start the nation of Israel within the land of Canaan. So that was important.
Very important.
And Joshua and Caleb are the exceptions because they were the spies that gave a good report of the land. So, Jeremy, chapter 27, take it away.
So, as we've read throughout these first four books, the inheritance would always go to the man,
mm-hmm.
or the oldest son, or the oldest cousin, later we find in Ruth. And so this has happened. So you give your riches to your first son, and he gives his riches to his first son, and bloody, bloody, bloody.
Mm-hmm.
But then in chapter 27, we see that there is a man with three daughters, and he doesn't have any men to hand it on to, and the daughters come to Moses. Yeah.
Yep.
To Moses, and Moses takes it to the Lord and talks about... should they lose their land? Should they, one, lose their land, and two, lose their name? Or can there be a way to keep the dad's name on the land and it be given to the daughters? And the Lord seems to think that that's a good idea.
Yeah.
And so then he makes this, like, what's that word in the Constitution where...
amendment?
Amendments. He makes this, like, amendment to that clause of, if there is no son... and if a man dies and has no son, then you shall transfer his inheritance to his daughter. And if he has no daughter, then you shall give his inheritance to his brothers. And so it even skips the brother's amendment to put this daughter amendment in.
Yeah.
And if he has no daughters, then you shall give his inheritance to his father's brothers. And so there is this line of inheritance, but in this case, these daughters get to inherit and keep the land and keep the name, which is quite progressive in one sense. And I wonder if at first Moses was like, oh, you can't do that. We've never done it like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or if Moses was so tight with God that he was like, yeah, this is a dope idea, bro.
Yeah. Well,
your thoughts?
It would definitely be going against the cultural norms of the time. Because we see all throughout the Bible, even throughout most of the rest of the Bible, every time there was inheritance, anytime there was the name of the father being passed along, it was always to the son.
Yep.
And so this is the first time that the daughters have been listed as lesser, but still gaining an equal inheritance amongst themselves if there's no brothers. So, like you said, it's skipping the father's brothers. The daughters have precedence over them. So, in the past, we have seen that if somebody has something, their inheritance is passed along to the closest male kinsman that they have. If they don't have any sons, it's to their brothers. And if they don't have any brothers, it's to their uncles, and so on. That type of thing has been outlined in different parts of the Torah so far. And now we have the daughters leapfrogging the uncles and the brothers of the father, that type of thing. We have them leapfrogging. So now if there's no sons, then it passes to the daughters. I wonder if that would mean if there was only one son, if that one son would get everything, or if the daughters would have some share in that. What do you think?
No, I imagine it would just go straight to the one son.
Yeah.
That seems to be the whole thing of the oldest sons anyway, that the oldest sons gets everything. And this is all to do with God's hope and dreams that there's no destitute people in the land.
Yeah.
And so you have the whole Sabbath year and the Jubilee year so that the land doesn't become destitute, so you can always make money out of the land by giving it the right rhythms. And then the Jubilee year is this idea that if you did badly with your money and you have to sell your land or sell yourself or sell your kids, the next generation isn't cursed by that because you have to give the land back.
Yeah.
And so if these three ladies didn't get the land,
there was five,
their children and their why do I keep saying three? Anyway, five. These ladies, if they didn't get land, then they'd be destitute, and then their children would be destitute, and then they would have no way to get back on the land because it would have been given away to someone else.
True.
And their family name would have died.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is an amazing, once again, an amazing way that God's like, I love everyone. Even if someone makes mistakes, I would like to make it so that people can be rich and wealthy if they so choose in the midst of sin.
Mm-hmm.
Which is great.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that.
And then we got... And then we get into a moment where Joshua is actually officially given the succession of Moses. So everyone knows that Moses isn't going into the Promised Land,
mm-hmm.
and they definitely need someone to lead them into the Promised Land. And you have this little kid who knows the land because he spied it out, brought back positive reports, has been with Moses ever since. And so his knowledge and his faith and his intimacy with God and the people of Israel is huge.
And he's probably like 80 years old.
Yeah. Super old. He's not like a spring chicken like we were always told in the songs at church.
Yeah.
I always thought he was a boy the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
That kid wasn't a kid when he went.
40 years.
Yeah. And so this is a genius move by God to pick someone so intimate with the goings-on of the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And you imagine that he's trusted, because he did bring back positive reports to the people. But then this is a new generation. And so you wonder how the new generation sees him, because he is so much younger than Moses, but he's still
so much older than everyone wise. Else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like how after God has Joshua presented before the people and commissioned to be the new leader, he does not immediately take over.
No.
We still have another book of the Bible, which is mostly laws to the new generation of
and
Israel.
A big old speech.
And a big
so
old
speech.
So it
could have been just 2 days.
True. That's very true. But we have, at the very least, a transition period starting from here where, well, starting from when God said that Moses wasn't going to go into the Promised Land, but publicly starting from here, where Joshua stands up in front of everyone, the priest commissions him, and says that the Spirit of the Lord is on him and that he will take over after Moses. And
taking over.
Have you ever been part of a church congregation that has gone through a transition of pastor like this?
Yes and no. I wasn't technically a part of the congregation anymore, And it wasn't a transition to a pastor. It was a transition from a pastor to nothing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's a bit different. Yeah. That's more like celebration and thanks and bye. And we don't know what else we're going to do.
Yeah.
And then I have been a part of taking on a pastorship.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't here when the last pastor left.
Right.
But it has been like, this is our new pastor, everyone. Yay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well...
At the same time, I've been a part of new leadership in, like, regional YWAM and new leadership at YWAM campuses.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of the same. But it is a time of, like, how do we trust this person as much as the last guy? Or, yay, the old guy's gone.
Yeah, so it's like changing, getting a new manager. You usually have somebody shadowing the other person for a while, and we know from the account here in the Bible that Joshua has been shadowing Moses for 40 years, so he's fairly familiar with these different goings on with the people of Israel and inquiring of the Lord. And he was on the mountain when God walked in front of Moses and all that type of thing. So we have the people of Israel probably know that. They probably think of Joshua as Moses' assistant, his ward, this dude that's always with him and helping him out. And so it makes sense. It's a very natural transition of leadership. So I imagine that it was probably good. These people that were witnessing it probably knew no different. They would have grown up with Joshua being Moses' second in command. So they probably thought, makes sense to pass on the manager role from Moses to Joshua. So that's pretty cool. And it's also...
And you would want... Sorry, on that too, you would wonder how well they were doing the low-level judicial system.
Mm.
Like having tens and fifties, having leaders that do law stuff. And if they were really good at that, then changing the top didn't really affect authority.
Yeah.
It would just affect their ability to be led by God specifically to places.
Right, yeah. It's like...
And so the fact that Joshua's already doing that...
Yeah.
I don't imagine it would change much.
It's like having the CEO of a really big corporation change. Yet in your local branch, your local chain of whatever it is, you still have the same managers, you still have the same bosses. It's just that the very top dog to whom your top dog answers has changed.
Yeah.
So it isn't...
Exactly.
It doesn't necessarily affect everybody directly, especially if Joshua holds to the same standard that Moses did. So
yeah,
that's what we're looking at there. And chapter 28 is more offerings, and this is on the back of the commissioning of Joshua. And it's also in regards to a couple of feasts, which is fun.
I love feasts.
And the Day of Atonement again, which means there's been a year since since they were in Leviticus, I guess. then the Feast of Booths. And then Men and Vows is a section that begins chapter 30 of Numbers. And we have not got too much left in this episode, and also not too much left in Numbers. So I'm very excited to get into this part here. So God talks about vows and pledges. And it says, if a man vows a vow to the Lord or swears an oath to bind himself by a pledge, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceeds out of his mouth. This kind of reflects a couple of the commandments that we have back in Exodus 20, where God says, don't lie and also don't give false testimony. So it's that type of thing. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. Which I think is... I don't know if that's in the Old Testament, but I think Jesus says that. And then it's the woman as well. It says, if a woman vows a vow to the Lord, binds herself by a pledge while within her father's house, and her father hears of her vow and her pledge by which she has bound herself and says nothing to her, then all her vows shall stand. And every pledge... So then the father essentially has authority to supersede a vow that his daughter makes. But
What would be an example of that? Like, I'm never going to cut my hair again.
Yeah.
And then the dad's like, we kind of need to cut your hair.
Yes, or...
it's getting gross.
Or if the daughter says something like, I'm never going to work, I refuse to get a job, or I've become a vegan, and the father's like, I am gross. Not paying for that. that type of thing, then... then God will forgive her because her father opposed her. But if she marries a husband, it's the same thing. If the husband disagrees, then God will forgive her. But that doesn't necessarily mean that God will forgive her husband. So if her husband says nothing to her from day to day, then he establishes all her vows, all her pledges that are upon her. So his silence is allowing her vows to stand, which I think is the way it's supposed to be. And these laws here, I don't necessarily think are misogynistic in nature. I think God's instructions here is to say, you have extra accountability within whichever household you are living in, that somebody else has a say in what you say as well. Maybe.
Yeah.
So what do you think if a teenage boy plows? That's a pledge. He plows a
field?
He veges and plows. What do you think if a teenage boy vows to be a vegan and his father opposes him? Do you think God will forgive him?
The boy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah? Do you think it's a matter of adulthood?
Well, and adulthood back then could have been different.
Sure.
And I think vegan is a weird one because it totally wouldn't have happened back then.
Yeah.
But let's say he vows never to marry. Manna. Yeah, true.
Okay.
So they were vegan.
Vow of singleness, sure.
But let's say he vows never to marry. Mm-hmm. And that's at 14 and that's not adulthood yet.
Yep.
And then the dad's like, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know anything about the world. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to take back that vow on your behalf.
Yep.
And God's like, yeah, smart. That's a good one, Dad. And then at 18, the boy's like, I definitely want to get married.
Mm-hmm.
I think God's going to forgive that. But if at 25, he's like, no, I'm never going to get married. And this is my solemn vow to you, God. Then I think God...
it's on him.
...would take that more serious.
Yep.
It's definitely on him.
Okay. Yep. I get that. So what's your take on the women being held to a slightly different standard or having the influence of a male as well?
Because of the whole patriarchy.
Okay.
And the value of women, like the high value of women. Like you talk to some people who are very pro the patriarchy and they see the patriarchy as just a high value of women.
Right.
So we value this woman more, and so she's protected by a man of authority. Or
I like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you could go into that a bit, but...
yeah, and you could obviously look at it the opposite way as well, that women have less values because a man has to say something as well, but...
yeah.
Yeah, I like that first
But if one. A woman has less value, then she needs to be protected as well.
Yes.
Because then people misuse them or abuse them.
So I guess we're at a stalemate on that one. Don't necessarily know. It's just a matter of interpretation, I suppose. So chapter 31 is the vengeance on Midian. We remember that the Midianites, obviously, just in the previous chapters, were the ones that led the Israelites astray, the Moabites and the Midianites. They were conspiring together with Balak and getting Balaam to prophesy good things over them. So God tells them to get vengeance on Midian.
Yeah, vengeance. Vengeance.
Vengeance.
Not vengeance.
Is it like...
but for all the vegans.
Yeah, all right. I like that. He says, you shall send 1,000 from each of the tribes of Israel to the war. So there he provided, out of the thousands of Israel, 1,000 from each tribe. So 12,000 warriors being sent out together with Phinehas, the son of Eleazar the priest, so the one that speared these two people,
Yeah, the ninja guy.
Yeah, the ninja who single-handed, double-handedly stopped the plague over the nation of Israel, sends him out because he has the vengeance, the jealousy of the Lord, out into battle, and they have the trumpets for the alarm. And they warred against Midian and killed every male. They killed the kings of Midian with the rest of their slain, all these dudes. Balaam, the son of Beor, was killed with the sword. So last episode we were wondering how Balaam's story got into the Bible. Turns out he was still in Midian and he got killed. Boom. What do you think about that?
Death happens, you know.
Yeah. Shittim happens, yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if he swapped back, like he didn't like the Lord anymore.
Mm, yeah.
And he started fighting for Midian again.
Maybe.
Because that seems to happen a ton.
Yeah. So,
okay, I wasn't following along in my Bible. Can you just...
verse 9. Eight, yeah. Right? So,
and they also killed Balaam.
Yeah. True. So, last episode we speculated that maybe that was the high point of his life. The one spiritual positive thing that he did for God.
Yeah.
And then he went back to his old ways. And it seems as though that's the case. Now, Midian. That's a name I have not heard in a long time. A long time.
How long?
A long time. We first heard that name back in Exodus chapter... I don't remember. When Moses went out into the wilderness and ended up in Midian and married the daughter of Jethro, the priest of Midian. So we've... Moses has had some interaction with the Midianites before.
So these are his people.
They are his wife's people, yeah. And they were his people for 40 years. That's awkward. So... Yeah, but we also know that from the relationship between Jacob and Esau and Israel and Edom, that things change over time. So this is a couple of generations later. This is 80 years later. Jethro is probably dead, but we don't know how young he actually was. But most likely Jethro's dead and his family is probably not in this part of Midian. But even if they were, then Jethro would be dead now too, because he's a male in Midian. They take captive the women and their little ones, and they take all the plunder, which is great, good for them. And they take the cities, and they burn them with fire. So this is an account of burninating the countryside and the peasants.
All the countryside.
But... before we had them take captive and live in these other cities of the Amorites. So, a little bit different, but they do take everything.
Which doesn't always happen.
That's true, yeah.
Sometimes God's like, don't touch anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting that they get to take everything on this occasion.
Mm-hmm. So then Moses confronts them and says, why have you let the women live? Behold, those on Balaam's advice caused the people of Israel to act treacherously against the Lord in the incident of Peor. And so the plagues came among the congregation of the Lord. So I wonder if Balaam's prophecies and his oracles had actually led to Balak inciting his own people and the people of Midian to... get with the Israelites to infiltrate them through the influence of the women as opposed to through warfare.
True.
That seems to be what this is implying.
That does happen throughout their history quite often.
Mm-hmm. Sure does.
Smart, so smart.
So he says, kill every woman who has known a man and let all the young virgins live. And keep them alive for yourselves. So maybe it is that it's an innocence thing, and the fact that women back then got married a lot younger means they would have been quite young girls, probably.
Oh, true, and less, like, conniving of trying to get them to worship the wrong gods, yep, right?
That's right. So far less of a manipulative influence, I think.
Interesting.
But he does remind them to purify themselves, and... the priest says to people, that you should only keep some of these things, and everything that can stand the fire you shall pass through the fire, and it shall be clean. Anything else should be burned. So
burninated.
Yeah, just burninate it all. And so there's a whole list of the plunder. And so this is Israel doing what they end up doing quite well throughout the book of Joshua until they lose interest. And they plundering their enemies and in some circumstances doing the right thing. Others doing the wrong thing. And if Moses hadn't directly confronted them, then they probably would have let these women of Midian live. And then who knows what would have happened. It would have been probably more of the same. Another plague. Phinehas stabbing some other people. Etc.
Or some more burninating.
Yeah. Probably. So that is chapter 32 of Numbers. Jeremy, do you have any closing thoughts on these chapters that we've read through?
I wrote down 25, 6, and 9 to think about later. Because of that whole conviction thing. That God loves life so much that he's willing to sometimes smack us to get our attention.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're in relationship with him, that smack is quite welcomed.
Yep.
And when we're out of relationship, our reaction to it can be either, are you serious, you're terrible and I hate you. Or it can be, oh, wow, yeah, I was out of line and I needed that smack to come back in.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting how throughout the Old Testament, we can read it like, oh, God's awful. He made a priest stab two people. Or we can look at it like, well, God loved his people so much that he had to slap them. And in this case, for whatever reason, the slap took the form of a big spear to the
belly. Middle, yeah.
To the bellies. And so, yeah, that's an interesting thing, I think.
Mm. Yeah, something to dwell on for sure. Well, I'll give the listeners some advice, and then you... Nope, other way around. You're going to give some advice to the listeners, and I will say the blessing this time.
If you get given a huge bag of star anise, don't instantly try and grind three of them in your grinder and put it directly into your tea, because it tastes a little bit too strong. That's my advice.
Great. Well, may the wind be ever at your back, unless it is a time when it is favorable to have it at your front. For example, if you're in a photo shoot, it would be very not very good for you to have the wind forever at your back, because then your hair will be blowing into the camera and you'll just look really crazy. So may the wind be ever at your back, unless in a photo shoot.
Or if it's a fart.
Or if it's a fart.